Radio Sai now brings you a special program by Professor Venkatraman on Sai Sankalpa, prepared for the occasion of the 90th birthday of Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba. Over to Professor Venkatraman.
I begin, as always, by offering my humble pranams at the lotus feet of our most beloved Swami. Loving Sai Ram and greetings from Prashanti Nilayam. After a fairly long break caused largely by my foot problem, I have, by Swami's grace, recovered enough to present this special program as my own personal homage to Bhagwan on this landmark day. I spent some time searching hard through the collection of discourses in our repository to pick a suitable theme. I finally decided to zoom in on a divine discourse Swami gave during the second summer course series, which was way back in the early 70s. For the record, Swami started conducting summer course in Indian culture and spirituality in 1972. The second summer course was conducted in 1974, and one particular discourse delivered towards the end of this summer course attracted my attention, because in that discourse, Swami not merely directs special attention to molding students as he always does, but explicitly discusses his avataric nature. To my knowledge, Swami does not appear to have made such extended remarks about his avataric nature elsewhere. I therefore decided to make Swami's own comments about the Satya Sai avatar the central theme of my presentation today. Before proceeding further, I should add that apart from critical observations concerning the Satya Sai avatar, Swami has, in this discourse, made extended observations about God, how to become united with God, and various related matters. All these observations of Swami have been culled out and made into a self-contained translation, quote-unquote, in which several paraphrases have been added for logical completeness and continuity. Seen from this angle, I feel this distillation I have compiled offers many points for deep reflection on this particular occasion. God willing, I hope to follow this up with a series which should be on the theme, Swami through the avataric prism. Now, these are opening remarks, and they would now be followed by a readout of the edited extracts from the discourse I referred to, which, by the way, was delivered on the penultimate day of the second summer course on Indian culture and spirituality, conducted in June 1974. Over now to the readout.
Moving around with basket-like hair, he gives the impression of one who cares. He bears no marks on his forehead, offering no clues about his religious preferences. He moves around in a long and beautiful silk robe, his feet occasionally peeping out. His singing is enchanting, his mood often playful. His outward characteristics are many, yet he seems beyond characterization. Indeed, who can cognize the truth that this short little Satya Sai is verily a manifestation of the Supreme One in human form? Embodiments of sacred Atma, students, boys and girls, from time immemorial, people have been asking questions like, who is God? What are his attributes? What powers does God command? And so on. Many believe that there are no answers to such questions. Such a belief is totally wrong. On the contrary, there are clear and definitive answers to all the questions just posed and many others like them. Through intense tapas, Maharishis of yore realized that whatever one wants to know is latent in prajnana or pure consciousness, and that a spark of this consciousness is in fact present in each and every individual. Sadly, not realizing that God is right within them, humans try to look for Him elsewhere. In principle, it is possible to realize divinity by starting with the belief that God is outside us. If this approach is pursued with purity, steadfastness and one-pointedness, one would ultimately come to realize that God is omnipresent, eternal, changeless and also beyond description. Furthermore, this God has no specific form. On the other hand, in ancient times, Maharishis searched for God by going deep inside and realized Him to be the very essence of the Atman. They also came to the conclusion that once Godhead is reached, the distinction between the so-called outside and inside disappears, because the two apparently different parts, namely the outer and the inner, lead to the same destination. What deludes a raw seeker into imagining the existence of an outside and an inside is dehabhimanam or body consciousness. However, as the seeker begins to advance in the quest for God, the seeker also begins to mature spiritually, at which point the earlier imagined distinction between the outside path of quest and the inner path of question starts fading away. It then becomes evident that the word omnipresence acquires a special meaning, which is that God is not only above you, below you, behind you and so on, but also within you. What is even more important, the Maharishis of yore came to the conclusion that Godhead is beyond both description in words and also comprehension by the mind, and can only be experienced. You may ask, what is the meaning of experiencing God? The answer to this begins with the fact that the scriptures advise all humans not to waste their lives merely in existence. Life must be lived with a purpose, and that purpose must be to become one with God. Happiness, I often say, is union with God. This union is possible when one goes above the senses. At that stage, the seeker and God becomes one. And since God is always in a state of pure bliss or ananda, the seeker would be immersed in ananda. The question now becomes, if God is beyond description and even comprehension, and can be experienced only in a transcendental manner, where does that leave ordinary people who are so much immersed in the transient world? It is for bridging the gap between the transient and the eternal that the ancient rishis left behind sacred scriptures that allow ordinary people to regulate their individual lives in such a manner that they too can stay within the bounds of satya and dharma. The scriptures thus form a gateway to the larger quest for God. Now, when a human being looks around, the person readily notices various attractions in the world. What almost everyone fails to realize is that these so-called attractions do not lead to ananda. On account of their delusion, people fall for these attractions, only to find later that what the world offers is mere transient pleasure and not eternal ananda. Few realize that God has blessed them with the human form and amazing capabilities that no other species have. Birth with the human form is thus an extraordinary boon. In spite of these blessings, thanks to the delusion created by worldly attractions, humans make the mistake of seeking transient pleasures of the world instead of going in quest of Ananda. That being said, people should not be worried or scared that they do not know what jnana or pure knowledge is or how to attain wisdom. Among other things, I am here to help as well as guide you in your quest for the divine. Many of the talks you have heard earlier in the summer course have already dwelt with the procedures and discipline needed to attain the state of Ananda. However, merely knowing the procedure is not enough. Far more important is to make the actual effort to follow those procedures. Such effort calls for a strong will, an unshakable determination to reach the goal, and an uncompromising commitment to spiritual discipline. Those qualities alone would enable one to ultimately become permanently immersed in bliss or ananda. Let us say that you are looking for gems like diamond, pearls or whatever. It is obvious that in order to find them, you have to go to a place where they are most likely to be found. And having gone to that place, you must search intensely. That is how you would find what you are looking for. Likewise, ananda can be experienced only if one is determined to do so. As mentioned earlier, the principal instrument to be used in this quest is human body itself. In fact, you are blessed with the human form precisely for this purpose. The goal of human life is simple. From God you have come, and to God you must return. It is in fact the right of every human being to experience Ananda, and by way of claiming what is your rightful due, you must start early to systematically and consistently divinize all thoughts, words and deeds. Consider a person who is fortunate to be born in a family that can provide the person concerned with all the wonderful things one would like to eat. That being the case, would anyone born in such a fortunate situation be so foolish to go out into the streets of the village and beg for food, accepting even old and decaying stuff ready to be thrown away? From the spiritual angle, most humans these days are behaving exactly like the man in the example I gave. When the all-pervading Paramatma is right within you, does it make any sense for you to look for God elsewhere? Based on Puranic stories and the like, elders often describe the Almighty in terms of specific forms with specific attributes. This approach is not totally meaningless. On the contrary, it does have its utility, but only in a limited sense, because it is based on incomplete knowledge and restricted perception. Rare indeed are people who can say anything meaningful about the limitless aspects of the Paramatma and the indescribable characteristics latent in him. Some would declare that God is omnipresent, and yet they would at the same time also localize God to specific places and temples. Is this not a contradiction? God transcends the gunas or the characteristics that humans acquire by virtue of having emanated from creation. Gunas inevitably produce dehabhimanam or body consciousness. This being the case, how can guna-bound mortals describe God whom rishis have declared is not only beyond words, but even the mind itself? By way of understanding this point, consider the ocean. As all of you know, the ocean is vast. When a person immerses a vessel into the vast ocean to draw some water, it is obvious that the size of the vessel used would determine how much water is drawn. In the same manner, when perception is limited by the gunas, one's appreciation of the divine is also correspondingly diminished. Thus it is that every established religion is at best a limited projection of Daiva Tattvam or the divine principle, which epitomizes infinite knowledge. That being the case, how can any religion claim to offer total knowledge? That does not mean, however, that religions are useless. On the other hand, they are quite helpful in that they encourage ordinary people to be truthful, righteous, charitable, kind, compassionate, etc. Indeed, such basic and initial steps are necessary as starting points. That said, one cannot be stuck forever at the lowest step of the long journey towards God. Just as in a school, students go from lower to higher standards, so also the seeker of God must make efforts to rise from lower to higher levels of religiosity and spiritual awareness. Truly speaking, there is only one religion, namely prema or pure love. That is the substratum of all established religions. Just as rivers flow, hardly conscious of the earth on which they are flowing, most religions miss the substratum that supports them all. Inter-religious differences, disputes and quarrels arise largely on account of limited perception of divinity, and that too via the imperfect senses and limited understanding. Added to that is the excessive importance often given to religious rites and practices. In the case of the avatars, the ultimate truth behind their physical form can never be grasped merely via the external aspects of the avatar. This precisely is what many are trying to do in the case of Sai, namely to define me solely via external aspects and the so-called miracles I am set to perform. Sadly, no one is making a serious effort to go beyond my physical form and actions to cognize the unchanging truth that Sai is. My form may not show it, but Sai has the full and total control of all powers divine. Unfortunately, a wide spectrum of people, including those who consider themselves to be wise, talk about nothing except my miracles. It is not possible for such mortals who are chained by body consciousness to comprehend the nature of God. The knowledge of people here and elsewhere is limited to what they have read and heard. Such knowledge does not constitute true wisdom. The divine is totally beyond words and the mind, and it is only the truly wise who can experience God. It is simply impossible for ordinary mortals to fully cognize and comprehend the nature of God. From then and now, humans have failed to recognize God, though He has appeared several times as an avatar in human form and moved freely amongst them. The truth is that avatars have hardly ever been contemporaneously recognized as a manifestation of the Supreme One, and that behind their visible human form was the divine itself. There are absolutely no limits to my power. My divine aspect cannot ever be limited by considerations of space and time. Infinite powers and infinite aspects are latent in me. Nevertheless, it sometimes becomes necessary for me to explicitly state these things. For those incapable of understanding all this, there is no use in telling all this. On the other hand, for those who know, there is obviously no need to. For those who are in the middle and whose faith fluctuates, it becomes necessary to give my visiting card. If today I have decided to talk about Sai, it is by way of giving you my visiting card. There is no other purpose or intention, irrespective of what you believe. In our scriptural history, there was one earlier avatar, namely Krishna, who openly declared that he was God come in human form. There were occasions in the Krishna avatar when Krishna appeared to face setbacks. Such apparent setbacks are all part of the divine drama enacted by the Lord here on earth. Humans fail to recognize that the Master always comes with a master plan, and that is why they sometimes mistakenly conclude that the avatar is facing setbacks. You would recall that when the Lord came as Krishna, He personally went on a peace mission to the court of the Kauravas. All along, Krishna knew very well that this mission was an exercise in futility, and yet He went on that mission. Why? Before answering that question, I must mention that while holding discussions with the Kauravas, Krishna did his best to prevent the war that seemed imminent. As all of you know, in the end, the war was actually fought. From the worldly point of view, Krishna's peace mission had failed. The truth is that Krishna knew very well his effort would not yield any result, and yet he went, which brings us back to the question, why did Krishna go on such a mission? The answer is simple. Krishna wanted to demonstrate to the world how wicked the Kauravas were. More importantly, through his actions, Krishna taught the world that when evil gains the upper hand, society has to make all efforts possible to cleanse itself. Incidentally, war is not the only means through which society can do so. In brief, when God appears in human form, He very much acts like humans do, and in the process allows difficulties and obstacles to confront Him. The truth is that nothing can obstruct the avatar. The avatar merely uses such occasions as teaching moments by demonstrating how adversity must be faced by firmly adhering to satya and dharma. Here it is important to know that if life is based entirely on prema, then the actions that flow from it are automatically aligned to satya and dharma. In this, the Sai avatar, my intervention occurs mainly via my sankalpa, namely Sai sankalpa. My sankalpa alone prevails. On the other hand, Sai may also choose not to make a sankalpa, in which case destiny steers the course of events in the normal way, that is, without direct avataric intervention. Everything depends, therefore, on how devotees conduct themselves in relation to Sai. The knowledge of people here and elsewhere is based entirely on what they have read or heard about from others. Such knowledge is not true wisdom. Since the divine is beyond words and even the mind, how can a limited mind cognize divinity? It is only the truly wise who can experience God. Having said that, now that I am amidst devotees, it is my duty to extend full support and protection to them. Since I move freely amongst you, talk to you and sing with you just like one of you, it is impossible even for very intelligent people to comprehend my true nature. My mission here on earth has many objectives. The first is to bring about unity in humankind. Next is to make humanity understand that there exists a divine principle that is the basis for all that exists. And finally, I wish to help humans to go back to God from whom they have all come. I also have a duty to make you appreciate the subtle interrelationships and the connectivity that exists amongst humans. Yet another duty of mine is to establish the truth that a spark of the self-effulgent divinity is latent in one and all, whose existence all humans would be able to discover via their own unique experiences. All powers being latent in me, there are no problems that I cannot solve if I choose to. However, since I rarely do so, the impression has grown that Sai merely performs a few miracles and cannot really solve intricate problems. Such conclusions are natural when spiritual ignorance prevails. Acting like a wheel, such ignorance not only blinds individuals to the Almighty behind the human form of the avatar, but more importantly, steers them away from seeking Godhead immanent within. Sai is the personification of prema or pure love, love that is limitless, unconditional, unfathomable and totally beyond normal human comprehension. And he has manifested to demonstrate via his words, action and life how prema is the royal road to satya and dharma. Remember that it is only when satya and dharma reign on earth that humanity can truly prosper and live in peace. All of you have an important role to play in this mission of Sai. While you're here as students, you must prepare yourselves suitably so that you can, in later life, play your own role in the fulfillment of Sai's work, namely, the revival of true adherence to Dharma, not only in this country, but throughout the world. Since everything depends on truth, the one who steadfastly adheres to Satya would never have to bow to others. On the other hand, untruth has to always subordinate itself to the negative forces in whose grip it has been trapped. The scriptures declare Satyam Jnanam Anantam Brahma, meaning that God is truth, ultimate knowledge, etc. This human form you see before you is verily the form of that Satyam and Brahman. Do not fill your head with mere scholarship. Instead, saturate your hearts with prema. In due course, by listening keenly to my discourses and carefully distilling the essence of my teachings, prepare yourselves to engage in my mission. What I am doing now is to prepare you to that grand future.
Sai Ram, this is Venkatraman back again, this time wanting to offer reflections on what you have just heard. There is so much packed in that discourse of 1974 that I'd better be careful not to subject you to information overload. Just to remind you once more, what you heard was made up of excerpts from the discourse of 1974, wherein Swami discussed his avataric aspects. The presentation also included other passages from the discourse, plus some paraphrases to add context and completeness. Now, Swami has said so much in that discourse that I obviously cannot offer an exhaustive commentary on it today. I shall therefore restrict myself to just 2 points, namely the opening Padyam and Swami's reference to his Sankalpa. God willing, I shall deal with the other aspects on later occasions. As many of you might be aware, in earlier times, Swami always began his discourse by singing a poem, or Padyam as it is called. And this Padyam, as Swami himself once explained, was often an advance overview of the topic on which he was going to speak later. Swami's Padyams are often difficult to translate live, and this particular Padyam is particularly so. What we have presented is based on hearing that Padyam over and over again, a countless number of times. The outcome was so compelling that I shall read out the Padyam again, although you heard it earlier as a part of the discourse presentation. This is how the Padyam goes. Moving around with basket-like hair, he gives the impression of one who cares. He bears no marks on his forehead, offering no clues about his religious preference. He moves around in a long and beautiful silk robe, his feet occasionally peeping out. His singing is enchanting, his mood often playful. His outward characteristics are many, yet he seems beyond characterization. Indeed, who can cognize the truth that this short little Satisai is verily a manifestation of the Supreme One in human form? I do not know how you feel, but as far as I am concerned, this Padyam, though simple, is truly awesome. Basically, Swami is telling his audience, you really do not know who I am, and it is better therefore you do not try to size me up. Later in the discourse, Swami declares explicitly that he is in fact an avatar of the Supreme One, etc., which means that our beloved Swami is in the same class as Lord Sri Ramachandra and Lord Sri Krishna Paramatma, both of whom were incarnations of the Supreme One bearing a human form. Among other things, Swami makes a reference to his Sankalpa, which is what I wish to focus on in the rest of my talk. Like many other words in Sanskrit, Sankalpa means different things in different contexts. Basically, it means a solemn vow. Swami being verily the Supreme One, there is really no need for him to talk about duties, vows, etc. However, since devotees saw only his human form and very little else, Swami regularly used the language that we humans use. It is in this context that Swami has used words like duty and sankalpa in this discourse. I wish I could talk about Swami's references to his duty, but for now I shall stay with his reference to sankalpa. Vedic rituals often require the performer of the rituals to make a sankalpa or vow as a part of the ritual. But Swami's sankalpa is an altogether different matter. It is a solemn declaration that has built into it the full power of the divine. Missing this point completely, there have been many occasions when people, a large segment of devotees included, were swept by disbelief when Swami made various announcements. For example, way back in the 70s, Swami said that one day there would be a university in Puttaparthi. Nobody dared to differ from Swami in public, but privately they all said, no way. And yet, in 1981, a university was actually established in Puttaparthi. There are, I am sure, many such examples available, but today I wish to recall two major sankalpas of Swami, which, looking back, are absolutely stunning. The first incident I wish to discuss concerns the establishment of the Sri Satyasai Institute of Higher Medical Sciences, Prashantigram, more popularly known as the Super Speciality Hospital in Puttaparthi. The story of that hospital officially begins on 22nd November 1990. But before I get to that, I need to give you a bit of the backstory. Establishing hospitals was nothing new for Bhagwan. In fact, one of the very first things Swami did after moving into what we now call the Mandir, and he moved on 23rd November 1950, his 25th birthday, one of the first things Swami did was to establish a small general hospital right next to the ashram. That hospital, now formally known as the Sri Satyasai General Hospital, has subsequently undergone many changes and expansions since it started functioning in 1956. The latest expansion was done on October 23rd this year, when a new block was added. Now, somewhere between 1989 and early 1990, Swami decided to step up an advanced hospital where major surgeries, including heart surgery, would be routinely performed, totally free of cost to the patient. Once the spade work was done, Swami decided that the foundation stone would be laid on 22nd November, so that 22nd November 1990, so that on the following day, i.e. 23rd November 1990, his 65th birthday, Swami could make an announcement to the world at large. Now, 22nd November happens to be the day on which the annual convocation of Swami's university is regularly held. Back then, the convocation was always held in the evening, and while the convocation and birthday schedules were being drawn up for that year, Swami thought he would ask the convocation chief guest to lay the foundation stone for the hospital earlier that morning. The guest of honor that year was a very high dignitary, and apparently he initially agreed to lay the foundation stone. However, he later changed his mind, since his protocol officer told him that a man holding such a high office as he did should never lay a foundation stone, for where was the guarantee that the building would be actually built? In short, the VIP backed out at the last minute. You don't dare to do such things with Swami, but that's what happened. And by the way, where Swami was concerned, many were the unkept promises, because hardly anyone truly understood that he was indeed the avatar of the age. To revert to the backstory, when the VIP defaulted on his given word, Swami couldn't care less. Instead, he decided to lay the foundation stone himself, and in fact did so. On the following day, during his birthday discourse, Swami suddenly broke in to make a historic announcement. Here is an audio clip of that electrifying moment.
ఏ విద్యాలయం నిర్మించిన వ్యాపారం 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 కానీ ఉచితంగా బీదలను చూచి కరుణించేటువంటి వ్యక్తి కనిపించటం లేదు. కనుక పల్లలు ఎందే ఇలాంటి పవిత్రమైన యొక్క శక్తిని అభివృద్ధి పరచాలని చెప్పి సంకల్పించుకుని 100 కోట్ల వ్యయం చేత మన ప్రశాంతి నియమందు ఒక విధమైన వైద్యాలయం స్థాపించడానికి ప్రయత్నించాము.
Whenever a hospital or an educational institution is set up, it is for business and business only. It is impossible to find a person who understands the plight of the poor and feels compassion for them. Therefore, in order to make such advanced facilities available in the village itself, it has been resolved to start a big hospital in Prashantinilam at a cost of 100 crore rupees.
గుండె జబ్బు వస్తే కొన్ని లక్షలు వ్యయం చేసి అమెరికాకు వెళుతున్నారు. వీళ్ళ గతి ఏమిటి? వారిని చూసేటువంటి వారెవరు? దర్శనానికి వెళితే కలర్ నీళ్లైనా వాళ్ళ ముఖాలు కొట్టరు. అలాంటి దురవస్థను గుర్తించి మనము ఇక్కడ ఒక పెద్ద వైద్యాలయాన్ని నిర్మించాము. బైపాస్ సర్జరీ కానీ లేక కిడ్నీ మార్చడం కానీ లంగ్స్ ఆపరేషన్ చేయటం కానీ బ్రెయిన్ ఆపరేషన్ చేయటం కానీ అన్ని ఉచితంగానే. ప్రారంభోత్సవం కూడా అప్పుడే నిర్ణయించుకున్నాం. 91 నవంబర్ 22 ఇది ప్రారంభోత్సవం చేస్తాం.
ఇఫ్ రిచ్ పీపుల్ డెవలప్ హార్ట్ ప్రాబ్లమ్స్ దే స్పెండ్ అ లాట్ ఆఫ్ మనీ అండ్ గో టు అమెరికా ఫర్ ట్రీట్మెంట్ బట్ వాట్ అబౌట్ ద పూర్ పీపుల్ హూ విల్ టేక్ కేర్ ఆఫ్ దెమ్ వాట్ ఈస్ టు బి దేర్ ఫేట్ ఇఫ్ దే గో టు అ హాస్పిటల్ ఇన్ అ బిగ్ సిటీ they would not be given even basic medicines. In view of the pitiable situation, we have decided to establish a big hospital here. In our hospital, heart surgery, kidney transplant, lung operation, brain surgery, all such medical procedures would be done free without any cost to the patient. The date of commencement of the hospital also has been decided. It will start on the 22nd of November, 1991.
Swami's announcement was greeted with loud cheer, which was to be expected. But did you notice the emphasis with which Swami made his announcement? That supreme confidence was a signature of his sankalpa. Basically, he was telling the VIP and indeed the whole of humanity, if I want to do a thing, it shall happen, no question about it. Now, way back in 1990, Puttaparthi was very much a village with no proper roads, water supply and so on. As for shopping facilities, telephones, etc., they were quite primitive. I know from personal experience. No wonder that while everybody cheered when the announcement about the hospital was made, there was at the same time no shortage of doubting Thomases, including amongst devotees. To make matters worse, the construction of the hospital building started late, and by mid-November 1991, it seemed impossible to have the hospital functioning on the appointed day, even in a rudimentary fashion. At this point, I would like to play for you an audio clip which contains a recall of those tense days towards the end of November. And this clip is by late Dr. Safaya, the first director of Swami Super Hospital in Puttaparthi. Dr. Safaya was a good friend of mine, and he spoke to Radio Sai long after the tension of the inauguration was all over. Listen now to Dr. Safaya recall the anxious moments he went through just prior to the inauguration.
The hospital was to be inaugurated on 22nd. And so the 2 days before, I came, I gave up, and I fell down on my bed at about 12 o'clock in the night. I said I cannot go any further because the hospital will not be ready to be inaugurated and operations have to be done. The conditions are not sterile. Scientifically, we are not ready. So I have failed my master, I told my wife, and I started weeping in my bed. She got alarmed and then she encouraged me that if you believe Swami is a God, He will do something, don't worry. The divine sankalpa has to be completed and it shall get completed. And lo and behold, it did get complete. And so on 22nd, when the inauguration was to be there, the right at 9 o'clock, he had predicted the knife should touch the skin. That is what exactly happened.
So, that was Dr. Safaya telling us how his wife assured him that come what may, Swami's sankalpa was bound to come true. Let me now take you through what actually happened on 22nd November 1991, the date set for inauguration. I was present on that occasion and actually witnessed the formal opening of the hospital. For a description of what actually happened that morning, please listen now to the following audio clip from a documentary on the hospital which Sai Prakash and I made many years ago for Radio Sai.
Yes, finally things did happen exactly as Swami had foretold 1 year in advance. In anticipation of the landmark event, Swami's students were chanting Vedas and sanctifying the atmosphere. Swami was in a wonderful mood, going here and there, supervising and giving last-minute instructions. Shortly before 9 in the morning of the appointed day, Prime Minister Mr. P.V. Narasimha Rao flew in from Delhi. no speech making, and without any fanfare, the hospital was declared open by the Prime Minister. Meanwhile, a patient had already been prepared for surgery and was on the operating table waiting for the divine signal. With a gesture of blessings from Swami, the surgeons proceeded to write a new and glorious chapter in the history of healthcare for the poor. Next day, 23rd November 1991, while delivering his traditional birthday discourse, Swami stunned the world with his announcement that the Puttaparthi Super Speciality Hospital was no longer a dream, but a concrete reality.
So, the impossible did happen, and the events of that incredible morning were truly Sai Sankalpa in action. Although, I must confess that at that time, I knew precious little about God's Sankalpa. As was to be expected, Swami joyfully announced during his birthday discourse next morning that his hospital had started functioning. Before I play that clip, let me, for effect, first repeat the announcement he made exactly 1 year earlier. Here it is.
ఏ విద్యాలయం నిర్మించినా వ్యాపారం 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 కానీ ఉచితంగా బీదలను చూచి కరుణించేటువంటి వ్యక్తి కనిపించటం లేదు. కనుక పల్లలు ఎందే ఇలాంటి పవిత్రమైన యొక్క శక్తిని అభివృద్ధి పరచాలని చెప్పిన సంకల్పించుకొని 100 కోట్ల వ్యయం చేత మన ప్రశాంతి నియమందు ఒక విధమైన వైద్యాలయం స్థాపించడానికి ప్రయత్నించాము.
Whenever a hospital or an educational institution is set up, it is for business and business only. It is impossible to find a person who understands the plight of the poor and feels compassion for them. Therefore, in order to make such advanced facilities available in the village itself, it has been resolved to start a big hospital in Prashantinilam at a cost of 100 crore rupees.
గుండె జబ్బు వస్తే కొన్ని లక్షలు వ్యయం చేసి అమెరికాకు వెళుతున్నారు. దీవెన గతి ఏమిటి?
అమెరికా
వారిని చూసేటువంటి వారెవరు? పట్టణానికి వెళితే కలర్ నీళ్లైనా వాళ్ళ ముఖాలు కొట్టరు. అలాంటి దురవస్థను గుర్తించి మనము ఇక్కడ ఒక పెద్ద వైద్యాలయాన్ని నిర్మించాము. బైపాస్ సర్జరీ కానీ లేక కిడ్నీ మార్చడం కానీ లంగ్స్ ఆపరేషన్ చేయటం కానీ బ్రెయిన్ ఆపరేషన్ చేయటం కానీ అన్ని ఉచితంగానే. ప్రారంభోత్సవం కూడా అప్పుడే నిర్ణయించుకున్నాం. 91 నవంబర్ 22 ఇది ప్రారంభోత్సవం చేస్తాం.
ఇఫ్ రిచ్ పీపుల్ డెవలప్ హార్ట్ ప్రాబ్లమ్స్ దే స్పెండ్ అ లాట్ ఆఫ్ మనీ అండ్ గో టు అమెరికా ఫర్ ట్రీట్మెంట్ బట్ వాట్ అబౌట్ ద పూర్ పీపుల్ హూ విల్ టేక్ కేర్ ఆఫ్ దెమ్ వాట్ ఈస్ టు బి దేర్ ఫేట్ ఇఫ్ దే గో టు అ హాస్పిటల్ ఇన్ అ బిగ్ సిటీ they would not be given even basic medicines. In view of the pitiable situation, we have decided to establish a big hospital here. In our hospital, heart surgery, kidney transplant, lung operation, brain surgery, all such medical procedures would be done free without any cost to the patient. The date of commencement of the hospital also has been decided. It will start on the 22nd of November, 1991.
That was Swami declaring his Sankalpa. 1 year later, on the occasion of his 66th birthday, here is Swami announcing the fructification of his Sankalpa.
ప్రారంభించిన తర్వాత 15 నిమిషములకే డాక్టర్ ఆపరేషన్ ప్రారంభించారు. 3 గంటల లోపల 4 పెద్ద ఆపరేషన్లు అంతా జరిగాయి. ఒకటి చాలా కాంప్లికేటెడ్, ఆ హార్ట్ లోపల రంధ్రం ఉంటుండాలి. అలాంటి ఆపరేషన్ కూడా సక్సెస్ అయిపోయింది, అందరూ క్షేమంగా ఉంది.
Today I wish to announce a good news. Within 15 minutes after the Prime Minister of India declared our hospital open, doctors started their surgeries. In 3 hours, 4 heart operations were performed. One was a complicated operation because there was a hole in the heart. All operations were successful and all patients are doing well after surgery.
Naysayers shook their head in total disbelief. Some hard-boiled eggs said, "Okay, some kind of a start has been made, no doubt, but it is impossible to sustain this hospital for more than a few months at the best." Well, dear listeners, as I am recording this, it's about 8 days to the 90th birthday, which also marks the 25th anniversary of the historic announcement. And guess what? The hospital, which was expected to fold up in a short time, has not only survived 24 years, but has in fact improved beyond recognition. How do I know? I know because during the last 3 weeks, I actually visited the hospital several times. God willing, someday I hope to do an extended video coverage of the hospital as it is at present. It's a fantastic site. Okay, let me now move on to the second Sai Sankalpa story, which curiously also has a hospital connection. Many listeners may recall that on 19 January 2001, the Sri Satya Sai Institute of Higher Medical Sciences, Whitefield, Bangalore, was formally inaugurated, this time without any high drama or fuss. I was present at that function also. I mention this event as a prelude to the first anniversary of the Bangalore Hospital, which took place on 19th January 2002. Swami was in the Vrindavan Ashram at that time, while I was here in Puttaparthi busy with Radio Sai work. A few days prior to the anniversary, Swami sent a message to Mr. Lee, the then Vice Chancellor, that he should come for the anniversary, and while doing so, also bring with him Mr. Anil Kumar and me. I could see a role for Anil Kumar as a translator, but I could not see any role for me, at least at that time. However, Swami works in mysterious ways, and I simply did not appreciate that Swami had a role for me also. I shall come back to that role a little later, but to move on with the story, there was to be, marking the first anniversary of the Bangalore Hospital, a 2-day symposium about various aspects related to healthcare, and Swami was supposed to inaugurate this 2-day symposium. Anticipating that Swami would deliver a discourse, I had already alerted our Sai Prakash and Sunil Kumar to be present at the function with their new Digibeta camera that Swami had given us a few months earlier. By the way, at that time, the Digibeta was about the best camera that one could ask for, and Swami gave us the best. Swami arrived at the conference venue, gave darshan by moving around the crowd, flashing all the while that incomparable smile of his. Along the way, he stopped here and there to have a word with someone or the other, take a letter, and so on. Finally, he went to the stage, where he formally inaugurated the 2-day symposium by lighting a lamp, after which he sat down to hear the Vedic chants, the welcome address, and other short speeches that followed. The formalities over, it was time for Swami to speak. As expected, Swami started by commenting extensively on healthcare matters, and then he unexpectedly moved off at a tangent to say this.
ఈనాడు పవిత్రమైనటువంటి యొక్క ఈ సమయం నందు నేను మరొకటి కూడా సంకల్పించుకున్నాను. మెడ్రాస్ రాష్ట్రం లోపల త్రాగడానికి నీరు లేదు. ఏదో ధనవంతులు లారీలతోనో లేక బండ్లతోనో తెప్పించుకుని త్రాగలుగుతున్నారు. ఈ బీద ప్రజలు ఏ నీటిని కొనుక్కోగలరు? ఏ రీతిగా తన ప్రాణాన్ని నిలుపుకోగలరు?
కలుగునే వర్షంతో పడినటువంటి ఆ గుంతల్లో నీళ్లు త్రాగి ఆరోగ్యాన్ని పాడు చేసుకుంటున్నాను.
ఆన్ దిస్ ఆస్పీషియస్ ఒకేషన్ ఐ హావ్ మేడ్ ఎ సంకల్ప. దేర్ ఇస్ ఎన్ అక్యూట్ షార్టేజ్ ఆఫ్ డ్రింకింగ్ వాటర్ ఇన్ ద సిటీ ఆఫ్ మద్రాస్. రిచ్ పీపుల్ ఆర్ ఏబుల్ టు బై డ్రింకింగ్ వాటర్. హౌ కెన్ పూర్ పీపుల్ అఫోర్డ్ టు బై వాటర్ లైక్ దిస్? హౌ క్యాన్ దే సర్వైవ్? దే ఆర్ దస్ ఫోర్స్ టు డ్రా స్టాగ్నెంట్ వాటర్ from the puddles formed by rain water, and by drinking this kind of dirty water they ruin their health.
కలుగుని ఎంత నష్టమైనా సరియే, ఎంత కష్టమైనా సరియే, మెడ్రాస్ కంతా కూడాను మంచి నీరు అందించాలని నేను సంకల్పించుకుంటున్నాను. ఇది తప్పక నెరవేరుతుంది, దీనికి సందేహమే లేదు. ఆ దృఢమైనటువంటి విశ్వాసాన్ని మానవుడు అభివృద్ధి పరచుకోవాలి.
Therefore, no matter how difficult or challenging the task is, I have made a sankalpa to provide drinking water to the whole of Madras. This objective will be accomplished. There cannot be any doubt about that. This is the kind of self-confidence that humans have to develop.
I could immediately sense that this was a historic announcement. At the same time, I knew next to nothing about the terrible drinking water scarcity that the metro city of Madras, now renamed Chennai, was facing at that time. What made the announcement even more surprising was that no one from Madras had even prayed to Swami to help that drought-stricken city. Anyway, there was the unexpected gesture of supreme compassion, totally out of the blue. And that moment has been captured for posterity by our Sai Prakash and Sunil Kumar. The story of Swami's drinking water project for Chennai, Madras or Chennai, is too long and complex to be repeated here. It is sufficient to draw attention to 5 salient points. Those points are: 1. Water to Chennai had to be provided from River Krishna flowing far away in the north in the state of Andhra Pradesh. 2. Such a project had in fact been attempted earlier, jointly sponsored by the states of Andhra Pradesh and Tamil Nadu. After about 7 years of work, the project was declared to have been completed and also duly inaugurated. 3. Water was then released from a reservoir in Andhra Pradesh, a reservoir that was fed by River Krishna. Although the full quota of drinking water allotted to Chennai Metro was released from this reservoir, only a small fraction of it reached the lakes in Chennai, where the water was to be stored and later distributed by the city's waterworks. 4. This went on year after year for about 6 or so years, during which period the monsoon also failed. And that was when the 8 million or so people of Chennai were thrown into utter despair, not knowing where to turn. 5. And that also was when Swami made his sankalpa, totally unknown to the people of Chennai. Swami's project to totally rebuild the canal that had been built earlier to bring water to Chennai was started in late 2002 or so. It was executed professionally and at a brisk pace. By late 2004, the construction work was over and Krishna water was released on Swami's 79th birthday that year. The water reached Chennai in 4 days flat instead of taking 12 days as it used to earlier. What is even more important, since that day, Krishna water has been unfailingly supplied every year, and Chennai has not faced acute drinking water shortage ever since. Dear listener, to my knowledge, there is no record of a private charitable trust anywhere in the world having supplied drinking water to a city with 8 million people, which is more than the population of many countries, especially in Europe. Getting back to Swami Sankalpa, a few months after the completion of the epoch-making water project for Chennai, Sai Prakash made a full documentary which was aired on the Sanskar channel in India and seen not only all over the country but also in Gulf countries. As Sai Prakash and I were editing that documentary, there was the final scene where we show Krishna water racing towards a dry and barren Pundi reservoir, the destination for Krishna water. We were both thrilled by that shot, and I said to Sai Prakash, "Sai Prakash, this is truly a dream come true. Remember Swami making that historic announcement in 2002? Why don't we overlay that scene here?" Sai Prakash instantly caught on to what I said and produced a stunning shot which shows water rushing and in the background Swami announcing that he was determined to give water to Madras come what may, emphatically adding, "This is sure to happen and there can be absolutely no doubt about it."
కనుకని ఎంత నష్టమైనా సరియే ఎంత కష్టమైనా సరియే మెడ్రాస్ కంతా కూడాను మంచి నీరు అందించాలని నేను సంకల్పించుకుంటున్నాను. ఇది తప్పక నెరవేరుతుంది, దీనికి సందేహమే లేదు.
Therefore, no matter how difficult or challenging the task is, I have made a sankalpa to provide drinking water to the whole of Madras. This objective will be accomplished. There cannot be any doubt about that.
Dear listener, in subsequent years, I have had many occasions to revisit that particular shot in various contexts. And every time I saw it, I got goosebumps. All I can say is that I had the blessing to be an eyewitness to Swami publicly announcing two amazing sankalpas, both of them coming true in a spectacular manner. I shall bring this narrative to a close by repeating an extract from the 1974 discourse wherein Bhagavan makes a reference to his sankalpa. He says, and I quote, "In this the Sai avatar, my intervention occurs mainly via my sankalpa, namely Sai sankalpa. My sankalpa alone prevails. On the other hand, Sai may also choose not to make a sankalpa, in which case destiny steers the course of events in the normal way, i.e. without direct avataric intervention. Everything depends, therefore, on how devotees conduct themselves in relation to Sai." Need I say anything more? Thank you for your patience. Offering this talk to our beloved Swami, I bring this special presentation to a close now. God bless and Jai Sai Ram.
You were listening to a special program by Professor G. Venkatraman on Sai Sankalpa, prepared specially on the occasion of the 90th birthday of Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba. Dear listener, your feedback is valuable to us. You may write to listener@radiosai.org. Thank you and Sai Ram.